Facebook, Instagram, and WhatsApp were all unavailable to thousands of users across the globe on Sunday. Website Down Detector, which monitors outages, said there were more than 14,000 incidents of people reporting issues with Facebook at its peak. DownDetector.com's live outage map showed the issues were mainly in Europe, and users reported that the three Facebook-owned services were down for more than 3 hours.
Pinterest is pinning back its valuation. The social media company set a price range Monday for its initial public offering of 75 million shares. At $15 to $17 a share, the market valuation of about $11.3 billion, short of the $12 billion valuation it secured during its last private fundraising 2 years ago.
In Hong Kong, the banking battle lines between old and new are being drawn out. It's just the latest Asian financial hub to roll out licenses to so-called virtual banks. But they aren't just going to financial companies. In Asia, it's big established tech firms that are threatening to crack open the industry.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the program. Today is Monday. It's April 15th, Tax Day. 5:08 in the morning. Thank you for tuning in for another edition of The Opening Bell and another business week and business day getting underway. We've got lots to cover this morning from around the globe, but we'll have the latest market numbers for you, the latest business news as well on today's program. A conversation about debts, $22 trillion in national debt so far in the U.S. We'll be joined by William Gale, who's an author and economist who's written a new book about this called Fiscal Therapy, Curing America's Debt Addiction and Investing in the Future. And he has quite a few ideas about debt, where we're at, where we're headed. That'll be in our first segment this morning. A little bit later on, you've probably heard reports Walgreens and CVS all getting ready to carry CBD products. CBD goes mainstream, and we have lucky to have with us the deputy editor at Consumer Reports. Lisa Gill will be in our second segment this morning to talk a little bit about this morning. What exactly are CBD products? Are they good for you? Is there a health issue here? And about what do you need to know before you start buying some of this stuff? That'll be coming up this morning. And we'll continue to watch news, weather, traffic, and sports as we move through the hour as well. So let's begin first on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk. All eyes will be on Wall Street today after stocks closed out last week in positive territory. The Dow Jones Industrials up 269 points on Friday. And this morning, mixed numbers in the futures market. The Dow is higher. The NASDAQ is lower. The S&P is just fractionally higher as well this morning. As we look around the rest of the globe, in London, Germany, and France, markets are higher by just a little bit this morning. And in Asia, markets mixed as well. The Nikkei ending the day up nearly 298 points. Other markets there in Asia, too, a little bit higher. For instance, the Sensex is about a third higher this morning. But the Hang Seng is off by a third, and the Shanghai is off by a third as well. Oil in the U.S. is at $63.35 a barrel, down about 54 cents. As we begin this morning, American Airlines extending its flight cancellations through August 19th as the Boeing 737 MAX aircraft remains grounded. In a statement yesterday, the airline said about 115 flights would be canceled per day, which is about 1.5% of Americans' total flying each day in the summer. Boeing is currently working to upgrade its software in the aftermath of two deadly crashes involving the 737 MAX within 5 months of each other. Southwest, you'll remember, announced last week it is scratching the 737 MAX 8 flights through August 5th. So this could be a summer of trouble where the 737 MAX 8 aircraft is concerned. It is tax day. Filing taxes, as we all know, can be stressful, but the one way to unwind is to cash in on some major deals today. Several businesses across the country are rewarding taxpayers with free treats, discounted meals, and even free massages. Planet Fitness is offering free massages for members and non-members at nearly 1,700 locations. Applebee's is featuring $1 strawberry margaritas at participating locations. Office Depot and Office Max are offering to shred up to 5 pounds of documents for free. And you can get a small, free small frozen yogurt at Banana Smoothies and frozen yogurt locations across the country. Lyft is taking thousands of electric bikes out of its ride-sharing program in three cities because of brake problems. Lyft is pulling those bikes from New York, San Francisco, and Los Angeles. The company says it's gotten a small number of complaints about problems with the front brakes on those electric bikes in those cities. Lyft will replace the pedal-assisted bikes with traditional bikes. It operates about 17,000 of those traditional bikes in San Francisco, L.A., and New York. Other cities watching the rollout of those electric bikes, getting ready to do the same in their communities. We begin front and center this morning with the national debt, now $22 trillion. Author and economist William Gale joining us this morning to talk about how budget deficits affect the economy. The book is called Fiscal Therapy, Curing America's Debt Addiction and Investing in the Future. William, good morning. Welcome to the opening bell.
Thank you very much.
The name of the book, Fiscal Therapy, Curing America's Debt Addiction and Investing in the Future. Boy, we really do have an addiction, don't we?
It's been a long time coming, and it's looking like it's going to get worse, yes.
$22 trillion the national debt has reached a level that we haven't seen before. What's going on in the country these days? Because it seems that we used to have people who would say debts and deficits were a bad thing, and now there's an overriding thought by some that they're maybe necessary or a good thing.
Well, it's certainly true that the debt and the deficit are not the only issue we face as a country. For, you know, saving the budget but destroying the economy in the process would be a Pyrrhic victory, right? But it's also true that the budget, the debt, the deficit, is sort of an umbrella issue. It covers, you know, all sorts of tax programs, all sorts of spending initiatives. So it feeds back into a lot of these other issues that we care about, whether it's health care or climate change or the unemployment rate. A lot of those issues feed through the budget.
There's something, too, that's been floating around lately called modern monetary theory, this notion that budget deficits don't really matter. You're diametrically opposed to that view, aren't you?
It's very difficult to pin down modern monetary theorists on exactly what they're saying. I think they have one key point that's correct, but not particularly relevant. And that is that since the U.S. prints its own currency, we can't literally go bankrupt. We could always pay our debt by printing more currency. And that's correct, but it doesn't affect the fact that deficits reduce national saving, that they reduce the growth rate in the long term, that they make policymakers unwilling to take on new initiatives or deal with existing problems. I think on a technicality they're correct. I just don't think it's that relevant to the debate.
Moving forward, what did you think is the prescription here for curing this addiction? Is it looking at budgeting in a different way? Is it first understanding that perhaps deficits are bad?
That's a great question. I think I'm less enamored of the budget process kind of issues than some other people are. That some people think, oh, if we just set up the right system, they'll eventually vote and do the right thing in Congress. And my view is, no, they won't. They'll do the right thing when they're ready to do the right thing. I think the biggest initial hurdle is there's something called the No New Taxes Pledge, which the vast majority of Republicans in Congress have signed. And there's a difference between wanting no new taxes and pledging never to raise taxes, because once they've pledged never to raise taxes, then it's hard to negotiate, because what's the other side going to negotiate? You know, what are you going to give to the other side? And so I think that mentality, we have to get past that pledge mentality and put everything on the table and then sit down and talk about it.
And the other part of this, too, is on one side or the other, it always seems the discussion when it comes to, okay, if we're not going to raise taxes, then we're going to cut programs. You talk in the book about why that's a bad idea, because we need those investments. We need some of those social programs to prop up parts of our population, and that would be a bad idea to keep doing those things.
That's right. The two biggest areas that I noted for spending increases are investment in children and investment in infrastructure. And the infrastructure stuff, I think, is obvious. The investment in kids is both an equity issue and a growth issue. The equity issue, of course, is that kids are affected by all sorts of things that they have no control over, basically their parents' income, the neighborhood they live in, and so on. But the growth issue is that as a country, we're doing a bad job of getting the most talented kids into the most educated, you know, getting the most education. And that's just a waste of resources. And we can do better on that by investing more in low-income children and being sure that they have the access to the educational opportunities that other kids do.
You know, and the other part, too, I know science is a big deal here, and we are talking a lot these days about climate change and how we're preparing for that. But it seems like we need to start investing in the future of how our country might look given climate change in 20, 30, 50 years.
One of the things proposed in the book is a carbon tax, and that's designed to specifically to make sure that people recognize the full cost of the polluting that they're doing. And that would be an important first step toward climate change. It's clear that we would need to do more than that. But that would be a step, and of course that would help the fiscal situation as well. But that's a really good example of another issue that's important. It has budgetary implications, but it has implications beyond the budget too.
People will argue that the economy is doing wonderfully right now, that you'd be hard pressed to find problems, but it doesn't. If you dig just below the surface, you'll find problems. And I know you talk about this. How far down do you have to dig to find something?
I think with the underinvestment in children and the lack of high quality infrastructure, I think you can look all around and see it. I mean, we have stories about air traffic controllers using Post-it notes to keep track of flights, and Domino's Pizza helping out local governments fill potholes so their drivers can get pizzas to their customers. I mean, that stuff is really clear. The debt. Problem is less visible to the naked eye, shall we say, and it's going to be a more gradual thing that builds up over time. The debt is projected to more than double as a share of the economy, and over the next 30 years, and that would put us in utterly uncharted territories in terms of dealing with that kind of debt burden. So that's going to show up gradually. I wouldn't call that a crisis or an emergency, but it's the framework we should be using to be thinking about all these other issues.
Yeah, I like how you put it in the book. The deficit isn't the wolf at the door; it's termites in the woodwork.
Yes, exactly. It's the slow, gradual eating away at capital stock or economic growth prospects, and hence American living standards.
Do you believe that there's a will among either side here to meet in the bipartisan way that they're going to have to solve these problems? What kind of shift is going to have to change in the thinking on all of the sides involved in fixing the problem?
That's another great question. I do not see a will right now with this Congress and this administration. In fact, what's happened the last couple years has gone in the opposite direction with a big tax cut and a spending deal. Something like 2/3 of the deficit right now is because of policies that we've enacted in the last couple of years. And, you know, it'll have to be a change of heart. It's sort of a chicken and egg problem, too. The public has to be interested to get the politicians interested, but the politicians have to talk about it to get the public interested. How we jumpstart that conversation is hard. But the one thing that makes me think we will eventually get there is that ultimately it's both a conservative and a liberal goal to have the government have its fiscal house in order. Liberals want an activist government that requires resources. Conservatives want a sound government that requires aligning spending and taxes.
Do you think that the worsening equality problems in the country will push this argument forward?
I think they're pushing a lot of arguments forward, and including this one. Inequality has become a first order issue in the country, in particular because it's robbing poor kids of opportunities that would both help them and help the rest of us. There's good evidence that programs like the Earned Income Credit and Medicaid food programs for low-income households pay off in terms of better long-term outcomes, ranging from health to education to law-abidingness.
I know you talk about some different solutions. There's a progressive tax. There's also a value-added tax.
Right. So a value-added tax is basically a national consumption tax. You can think of it like a retail sales tax, except it's collected at stages, at each stage of production and sale, rather than all at the retail level. Every country in the world has a value-added tax except us. It's a very efficient way to finance the government, and given that spending is going to rise in the future because of Social Security and Medicare and because of these new investments we need to make, I feel like a value-added tax is a crucial part of the solution.
Are you optimistic that this is going to be front and center in terms of our discussion moving forward, that we're going to be able to solve this eventually before it's too late?
I try to be. It's a hard issue for the political system because the benefits are off in the future, and a lot of the people that will benefit either are too young to vote or don't even exist yet. But the costs are kind of in the here and now, and people recognize when they bear the cost, but the benefits are harder to claim. So in the political system, the people with concentrated losers tend to be very intense opposition. And so couple that with the fact that the founding fathers made it deliberately difficult for the government to do big things. It's got to get through both houses of Congress and the president has to sign it. Those are the sources of pessimism, especially when you look at the polarization in Congress right now.
Bill, thank you for the book. Thank you for the conversation this morning.
Thanks very much. I really appreciate it.
William Gale, former White House senior economist under George H.W. Bush, co-director of the Tax Policy Center, and author of Fiscal Therapy, Curing America's Debt Addiction and Investing in the Future.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning again, everyone. Welcome back to the program. Thanks for being here with us on our Monday edition of The Opening Bell. CBD is a compound in marijuana and hemp, and you're going to be seeing a lot more of it soon. Pharmacies like CVS and Walgreens are starting to sell CBD products. So we thought we'd bring in Lisa Gill this morning for a conversation on this. Lisa is one of the senior editors, deputy editors at Consumer Reports, and she's written a new piece called CBD Goes Mainstream. Lisa, good morning. Welcome to the program.
Oh, good morning, Steve. Thanks so much for having me on today.
I mentioned that we're going to see more of this, probably already are seeing more of this. If you shop at CVS and Walgreens, both of those pharmacy chains are starting to carry CBD products. To give us a sense of what we're about to see here and what CBD is.
Right. So, CBD is this compound that comes out of both marijuana and hemp, as you mentioned, and it has exploded across the market. And one reason is because it's thought to treat things like anxiety, sleep, and joint pain. And these are things that everybody typically, you have a problem with one of those at any point in your life. And the reason you're going to see it possibly everywhere is because the 2018 Farm Bill legalized farmers to grow hemp after being illegal for almost a century. Farmers can now grow hemp, and CBD is a derivative of that. And the definition of hemp, and this is really important, is that it only contains 0.3 THC, which is the psychoactive compound, or one of the psychoactive compounds of marijuana, but CBD isn't psychoactive, and there's only a very low level of THC. So It's a product that we found nationally that millions of people are trying. In fact, 64 million people have tried it in the last 24 months, which is just an astounding number.
It is. And, also Consumer Reports has conducted a survey of nearly 4,000 people to talk about, to get their feelings about all of this. What does that survey show you?
Yeah, so we found 64 million really is about one out of every four adult Americans has tried it in the last 24 months, and they're using it for really reducing stress or anxiety. They are saying that it's helping with joint pain. Some people are just trying it for fun and recreation. So there are some people who go to a cafe, some cafes, at least in the New York area and in the California area, you can get CBD into a coffee, for example. Oh, wow. You could also get it even in an alcoholic beverage at a bar, which is really, really mind-blowing. And, you know, a lot of people, in fact, the majority of people say that it's helped them to some degree to treat their problem, which this is really what's captured our attention. A lot of people said it helps, and a lot of people said that they did not experience a side effect. Three quarters said they did not have a side effect, which is a really, compared to some prescription drugs, is a very high number. So we're very encouraged by it.
Right, and this feels very familiar, Lisa. We've seen over the years things pop up and it become a fad and then disappear. Is that what this is going to be? Is there some concern here that maybe people's feelings about this are ahead of the skis in terms of what science actually says?
Well, that's a very fair question. You're going to have two things kind of converge at the same time at the aisles in Walgreens and the aisles at CVS, and that is just a huge influx of products. You'll see them all different kinds, whether it's an edible product like maybe a gummy bear or something to that effect, drops and sprays and oils. I mean, people are making thousands of products from CBD, and we do expect more. The market itself expects to be a $22 billion market by 2022, which is just amazing. But at the same time, you're right. The science is catching up. The FDA did approve a CBD drug for children that have a really difficult form of epilepsy. And when they did that, there was some really excellent research showing, you know, that it helped, and also showed there were some little bit of side effects, but this is also a really highly concentrated form of CBD. There are some just random other studies, and they're not, you know, the more research, the better, but we don't have a ton at the moment. The one reason that a lot of people wind up trying it is because the side effects are typically not, the risk is fairly low, especially at lower doses, and one of the main side effects is fatigue. And so your risk-benefit of the drug is not so bad. I think that's why you'll see a lot of people giving it a shot.
Yeah, and the other part of this, too, is we talk a lot about the opioid crisis across the country and around the world. People want to get away if they have joint pain or some sort of pain from those opioids and feel like this might be the alternative.
That's a great point. We saw that it looks like, you know, it was about a quarter of the people who we talked to for our nationally representative survey decided to use CBD or try CBD for joint pain or chronic pain. And a percentage of those, about a third, said that, I'm sorry, about 22%, one out of every five, said that they replaced a prescription drug with by using CBD, which is a really, 22% is a huge figure. And a percentage of those, again, about a fifth, were opioids. So we saw people tell us that they are replacing their opioid prescriptions, which is a good thing. It's a really good thing if you can do it. And I would caution your listeners, though, if you decide to do that, you definitely want to do this with the help of your physician. You do not just want to walk into a Walgreens or CVS, pick up a bottle of this stuff, and stop your opioid prescription. Get professional help to sort of guide you and titrate you through the process.
Yeah, and that's very good advice. I know a lot of people may not take it, but because people don't like seeing their doctors. I know some people don't, and they'll just go and grab something. For those folks and for everybody else who's listening, is there any guidance about how or what to buy here in terms of dosage? Is there a way that this is produced or put in a product that we should that we know we're getting something effective?
Sure. This stuff is all over the map in terms of dosage, and the testing requirements are scant, is how we would describe it. There's two questions that you just sort of asked in here. So the first one is, for a lot of common things like joint pain, sleep problems, or anxiety, the pharmacologists that we've spoken to suggest starting low and going slow. And starting low is about a 10 milligram dose, which you can get sometimes in a pill form, or you can get in an oil or tincture form. When you do go buy these products, our number one piece of advice is to look for something called a certificate of analysis or COA for short. And that certificate of analysis shows you the potency and purity. It really validates that what's in the bottle is what it says is in there. And that's really important. There have been other studies out in the market showing that a lot of these things are mislabeled. They may not contain any CBD at all, or they may contain a lot more than they say they do. We're also really concerned about purity issues. You want to make sure that there's no heavy metals, pesticides in those products. So that COA is really important. There are a couple of states, and you may see this on shelves, Indiana and Utah, for example, and you know, Illinois is probably not too far behind here, require a QR code on the product so that you can take your phone, take a picture of it, and automatically get the test results. So we're seeing this more in the market, which is a really good thing. And you definitely want to look for the COA. If you can't get a COA or a manufacturer or a retailer refuses to give it to you, our suggestion is to find another place to buy it. Safety is really a top priority.
Is there a sense of false sense of security here that if we go into a Walgreens or CVS, that what is on the shelf there has been tested and is good for us and is not going to hurt us? Has Walgreens and CVS done the due diligence on this?
Well, CVS in particular came out and was very clear that they are working with a third-party testing facility to make sure that all the products that they put on shelf will have a third-party certification that they are in contact with and they're controlling, which is really a wonderful, very, very good thing. With Walgreens, it's unknown. They did not confirm or tell us one way or another. And actually, Rite Aid has also come out sort of reportedly and said that they're also going to carry CBD as well. But the retailers working with testers, third-party test companies, is a great thing. And, you know, we only need that because most states don't have testing requirements of finished products, the kind that you would buy on a store shelf. So that's why it matters. But CVS is really the one that's come out most recently and said they have a third-party testing partner.
Lisa, back to this survey, the freight train of marijuana legalization is really coming down the tracks, and your survey kind of proves that, doesn't it?
It is, and you know, not only that, there is widespread support by the adult American public for both legalizing medical marijuana as well as recreational marijuana. And we are tracking bills in key states like New Jersey, which actually just skipped voting for it, but New York is next, which would be a huge, I mean, just a massive sea change, I think, for the East Coast. But the legalization train is definitely left the station, and we're watching as other states are either adding conditions for which doctors can recommend medical marijuana for, or they're debating in, you know, House assemblies and their state legislatures whether or not they'd like to legalize it across the board for adult use. It's a fascinating change, and we're going to see more of it.
Yeah, more than three quarters of people in this survey favor legalization of medical marijuana, and the numbers are pretty high too for recreational marijuana.
That's right. That's right. One thing I will tell you though is and this is a good thing for your readers to know. I'm sorry, your listeners to know. And I'm thinking about readers because I'm looking here at the magazine. You know, even though you may be going from one state to another, traveling with actually even CBD, even though technically the Farm Bill has allowed consumers to travel across state lines with CBD, it's not been tested yet. And I would encourage people to be very discreet about either not traveling with it at all, particularly for an airplane, but definitely with marijuana, even if you've got your physician recommendation, even if you've got all your proper paperwork, it is technically illegal to fly with it. And so definitely be careful. Don't do that. And with CBD, you know, as TSA becomes more comfortable with these products and what they look like, you may not want to fly with it right now.
All right. Good advice. Lisa, good stuff this morning. Thank you for being on with us.
Oh, thanks so much.
Lisa Gill, a deputy editor at Consumer Reports on CBD going mainstream. We're going to link out to her latest report on this at consumerreports.org.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
On the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk, we're seeing a little weakness in the futures market this morning. Heading to the opening bell later this morning, Dow futures are up just 44 points this morning. NASDAQ futures are negative. S&P futures up just a fraction. Now for agriculture and commodities. Good morning, Orion Samuelson.
Good morning, Steve. A fairly quiet weekend on agricultural news and activity, but on Saturday we did talk to officials of the National Pork Producers Council again about the cancellation of World Pork Expo the first week of June in Des Moines, Iowa, and learned that it was done with concern about the spread of African swine fever. And maybe it's a legitimate concern for pork producers here in the United States. In light of the report from China over the weekend that China's pig herd fell 18.8% in March from the previous year, China's sow herd dropped 21% in March from the same period a year earlier, and the pig herd was down 1.2%. The sow herd fell 2.3% last month from February. China, of course, is home to the world's largest hog herd. It's reported about 120 cases of African swine fever since it was first detected in the country in early August. Here at home, the weatherman let us know once again that winter is not going to go away quietly, as once again we saw snowfall over parts of the Midwest. And what's the latest on the China-U.S. trade talks? Treasury Secretary Steven Mnuchin said Saturday that the trade agreement would go, quote, way beyond previous efforts to open China's markets to U.S. companies, and hoped the two sides were close to the final round of negotiations. Meanwhile, we keep on watching and waiting. You have a great day. I'm Orion Samuelson.
Now the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk Outlook for Monday, April the 15th. Of course, it is tax day. We'll also see the Empire State Manufacturing Survey and get a report on Treasury as well, a couple of bill auctions, and Fed speakers today, too, including the Chicago Fed President Charles Evans out speaking today. A number of companies reporting quarterly earnings, including Citigroup, Goldman Sachs, M&T Bank, and Alfria. Just some of the things that could move the markets on this Monday, April the 15th.